Hey folks, it's Sunny. If you're listening to me, it means that you're listening to this on the free feed. This is the Black Widow episode. First really big, huge movie back in theaters. Big box office. Dropped off pretty quick. As always, you should subscribe to the Patreon because, A, it keeps this whole thing sustainable. You know, it's a fair amount of work. Not to mention costs and, you know, all that sort of stuff. It goes into the show, just our time, mostly. Just Vic's time. Vic could be eating brats right now, but now he's taping shows with us for you, the listener. But also because there are going to be member only posts on the Patreon that'll never be on the iTunes feed. For instance, this week we in conjunction with Black Widow we did a big ranking of all the MCU movies. So if you've ever wanted to hear us talk for 30 minutes about every single MCU movie in capsule form, now's your chance. So sign up at subbeacon.com. That's the Patreon. It's as little as a dollar a month, as many as $1 trillion a month. That's how you roll. And check us out. Thanks.
I tell people my sister moved out west.
You're a science teacher.
Your husband, he renovates houses.
You're thinking about moving, but you're gonna wait until the interest rates go down.
That's not my story.
Before I was an Avenger, I made mistakes.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Jonathan V. Last and Sunny Bunch. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is now available through Patreon. Go to subbeacon.com. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and don't forget about the Subbeacon merchandise store at tpublic.com.
Gentlemen, sale this weekend. I got an email from tpublic saying there's a sale. So if you've been waiting, I got PayPal money coming your guys' way. So
people are buying the merch. People
literally,
that's really exciting.
Literally ones of dollars for each of us. Don't spend it all in one place, boys. Yeah,
whoever bought the mug, thank you. How are we doing? Sunny.
Yeah.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Recently.
Did you enjoy person. In the flesh.
In person. You looked well. You looked
Thank
unchanged.
You.
I understand you fluctuated, but you fluctuated back just in time.
Well, I put on during the pandemic, I put on some weight again and I lost some weight again. So, I mean, there was a point in the pandemic lockdown era where I was basically just eating ice cream and drinking bourbon. That was it. That was my diet for a little while. My
ice
blood
cream
was
and bourbon
like
is a great
coagulated alcoholic, like a slushy full
yes.
of.
Yes, your blood type is Rocky Road, as they say.
Yeah. Boy, it was yeah. But anyway, it's back under control, fellas. Back
Good.
Under control.
Did you miss? You. Did you miss the humidity? Is it like that
it's
in
been,
Texas?
It's been a little bit humid this year in Dallas. It's been a little humid, but not too bad. Yeah. No, it was actually pretty pleasant in D.C. for the most part. It was actually a good weekend. It was in the 80s.
It was rare because it's horrendous again. So yeah. You missed out.
It was nice.
Yeah. So
I brought the good weather with me.
What else is happening with you? What's happening?
So fun story. I got a letter from the IRS.
Those are the worst, by the way, because before you open them, you don't know what it is. I mean, it's just already assume the worst. I always assumed that's it.
Wasn't a good one. So I got a letter from the IRS. I opened it
Dear
up.
Dear Mr. Bunch, you gave highlights subscriptions to kids in a hospital.
No, that was not it. That was not my receipt. It was not my receipt from my friend who I bought the highlights from.
Oh.
So I open up the letter and it says your 1099s don't match.
Oh,
the information that we have. We're here. You in 2019. This is not a 2020 issue. This is a 2019 issue. So in 2019, the IRS sent me a list of three 1099 MISC forms that did not match, which was weird to me. So I was like, okay, let me take a look. I went and looked. The first one actually matched perfectly for one of them, and I'm like, okay, I don't know why you don't have this. Maybe the like EIN was wrong or something. I don't know.
No.
There was the second one again, matched perfectly. I was like, again, not sure what's going on here. And then the third one, I'm not going to name the freelance outlet for which this has happened. So just, think of it as magazine A in your head. According to magazine A,
I did $200,000 worth of freelance work for them in 2019.
Oh, you wrote a talk of the town item for the New Yorker?
Apparently, according to
very
this.
Very nice. Very nice.
According to this, this
that
outlet,
joke,
which
that
I,
joke worked in 1995.
Yeah, that doesn't work anymore. According to this outlet, they sent a 1099 to the IRS stating that I had done $200,000 worth of work for them. Now, I'm a man of extreme wealth, as you know, but I'm not that wealthy. I'm not, you know, doing $200,000 of random work for some news outlet. No, I went back and I looked at the 1099 because I still have them. I still have all my tax forms, you know, because I'm a responsible citizen.
Yes.
And I keep it all together. Yeah. And I went and looked, and I was like, nope, it's $2,000. That's what I did, $2,000 worth of work. So some idiot somewhere put in the wrong amount of money.
Hey.
Now, luckily for me, as a responsible person, I use TurboTax. I do it myself, but I always get the audit protection, which is probably, I'm sure it's a scam. Someone's going to be like, how, why would you waste your money?
But for this,
because it's like an extra $80 a year. Or whatever, and I give it all to TurboTax, and they're like, "Yeah, this is somebody clearly made a mistake at Magazine A. You should email your editor. We'll get a new 1099 sent in, but we'll send the letter to the IRS and everything else, and we'll figure out what's going on with these other 1099s. It's like clear that you still have, you still have all the information. It's fine, you know, whatever. But I have to tell you that the first guy I talked to was like, oh yeah, so that means the IRS thinks you owe them $198,000. And I was like, yes. you owe taxes on $198,000. Yeah. But then he was like, nice, yeah, chunk. with penalties and interest, that's probably gonna be like, you don't have X amount of money in the bank, do you? I was like, well, I do. But I'm not, you know, I don't want to write a check. He's like, no, you're not going to have to. We're going to figure all this out. We're going to figure all this out. But I was just like, it's just one of these things where it's like,
nightmare.
It's one of these things where for like a minute, you're like, am I going to prison?
Right.
What's happening to me?
You assume the worst. You assume that. How did this happen? Do you find yourself like sweating? I get, you know, when I get like really like nervous about a situation like that, I'll find involuntarily, I'll just break a sweat.
Luckily I have all the documents right there. So I literally just went to my, it's one of the few things that I actually have like done a good job of thankfully keeping records of is taxes. I just went to, the drawer with my taxes. I was like, oh yeah, nope, this is clearly a typo on Magazine A's part. So I've
had this happen to me twice before. Once it was the IRS, not the IRS, once it was the employer's fault for doing exactly this, like adding a zero.
It'd be funny if it's the same magazine.
And once it was my fault, which is, you know, I was filing 19 different 1099s, each for like $300 or something. And just, you know, one of them didn't get filed. And both times dealing with the IRS was super duper easy.
Good.
Once you got to talk to the person you needed to talk to.
Yeah.
And that took forever.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was sending certified letters back and forth. And you know, once I finally got to the person to deal with, it was a 5-minute conversation. It was absolutely painless. And so this is why the audit defense stuff with TurboTax is absolutely worth it. 80 bucks a year.
Yeah. How much is your time worth?
This happens again, which for people like us who have a lot of freelance income, because we're writers, this is like part of what we do, right? If you're a normal person that all you do is your income is a W-2 and that's it, you're filing a 1099 EZ or something.
Standard deduction.
Right. You know, you don't need audit defense. Yeah. But for people like us who have a lot of freelance gigs, it's 80 bucks a year so that somebody else will be the interface and make all of those phone calls back and forth to the IRS.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. So this is not SponCon, for the record, for TurboTax or anything. But, you know, I have to say I was like, it's not settled yet. It's not all done yet. So maybe I come back on next week.
Too soon.
Maybe I come back next week and I'm like, I'm burning TurboTax down to the ground.
Right,
you know, but I think it's from what I can tell, it's going
to
be.
They're supposed to take care of it.
So anyway, that was my like coming back from DC. It was like, oh, a letter from the IRS.
Those envelopes are the worst, and then you judge it by the thickness of it. But you know, hopefully it's thin. JVL.
I hesitate to do this, but I think we got to get a little serious for a moment. I would like to. So right now, as we are taping, a very good friend of mine, a guy I'm actually really close with, who you have probably met, the two of you guys, Flag Taylor.
Oh, sure. Of course.
Yeah, he's a very close personal friend of mine. He teaches communism. He's a professor of communism at Swarthmore College.
Skid.
And now I'm pretty sure it's Swarthmore. and he teaches communist studies there.
I think it's actually Strayer. I think it's Strayer.
He's of the age where he has his first colonoscopy tomorrow.
And so
now he has just downed his first 64 ounce bottle of the stuff, and he has to set his alarm for 2 a.m.
Is it the dye?
No, it's like the prescription strength blow. Prescription strength kombucha. Is what it is, basically.
You know what? Forget it. I'm just going to risk it. I'm
right now,
that's too much for me.
He is. We've been in contact. There have been some gifts sent back and forth. It's not good. Mm-hmm. And so, guys, just thoughts and prayers.
Yes,
thoughts and prayers for Flag.
Absolutely, because
he's
rocketing
off the toilet right now.
Is he?
It's like lava flowing.
Is he going to be? Is he going to be awake for the procedure, or completely out, or like kind of awake?
All I know is every time I think about this stuff, I think about Chevy Chase and Fletch as he goes, "Woo! Did you time there, Doc?"
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Use the whole fist.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. Was that Fletch? No, it's was Fletch. That? Let's Fletch. Yeah. Fletch,
unbelievable.
Yeah. That's a thing.
So you're gonna like with all of your Christian Science stuff. You don't take aspirin when you have a headache.
Yeah,
you are not getting scoped.
Well, I don't know. I mean, this is just a standard scope, or is there a reason for the scope?
No, you turn 50, and
yeah, this, okay. This, well, this, I, you gotta, my understanding is that you don't need to drink that. Really? Are you really sure you have to do that stuff?
Peter, do you understand how this works?
Yeah, they
see where it goes.
Visually,
right?
They do, but what do? Yes.
So they just want it to be. They're performing a visual inspection of the area, so it needs to be uncluttered.
Clean.
It means to be uncleaned or clean? Oh, uncluttered.
It's clean.
Uncluttered.
Yeah. I'm pretty good in that department already. Let me just say that. I don't think I stay away from, people are like, it's all these things that like, oh, it's good for fiber, like that. It's like, stay away from me. Cheerios. If I have Cheerios 10 minutes, I got to go. That thing does not sit well with
what?
Me. Cheerios blast through. It's like, that is like. That's like colon blow for me.
You might want to get one of these colonoscopies.
No, I just I
you're like eating a bowl
down.
Of Cheerios, and all of a sudden, I gotta get out.
I gotta stick with like a block of cheese.
I gotta have a ribeye.
Elvis Presley had the night before he died. Give that to me because I'm trying to slow myself down.
If I'm not eating a whole fried chicken or one of those deep fried turkeys for breakfast,
that's right.
It's
that's
just
right, that's
and whatever
right.
I put in my body comes right out.
Those bagels and cream cheese, man, that goes right through me.
All right. Anyway, how are you, okay. Victorino? Flag, we're thinking of you, buddy.
Yes. Thoughts and prayers. I'm doing fine. I'll tell you,
it was nice seeing you at a party.
A rare appearance by you.
I loved it. I had so much fun.
I'm sure you did. Really, I'm sure. It was so great.
I saw JBL at two friends. Separate parties this week, as a matter of fact. There was a happy hour.
As you saw me.
At the office, and then I saw and then I went to dinner with them. I saw both of you separately and then together. It was great. And then at our friend birthday Matt Cotinetti's birthday party, you were having a great time. You definitely weren't sitting by yourself in the corner.
No, I was like, who can't I talk? I was like, I have to talk to everybody. It was great.
Did you get elected king of the party?
I'm pretty sure I did.
Okay. Good.
Yes. it was really nice, and then it just devolved after that. Because as Sonny remembers, we closed down another bar, and really was that necessary? And Kate's like, it's 12:30. we need to go. And
12:30, Brent Shear is like screaming at the top of his lungs.
Yeah, I didn't even notice
that. In a nice hotel.
That's how bad. It just sounds like
it's his normal voice.
That's the way he talks. It's like this. So you know, it's McCormick's and McLean's and you guys and Continetti's. So it was great. Matt had a great time. So happy birthday to him. Lovely time. The other night watched, in the last couple of days, watched two movies, old movies. One was Crocodile Dundee, which was on AMC.
That's right? Not a knife.
Right. Okay. And then the other one is Arthur. The funny thing is I love Arthur. And the funny thing is both of them heavy on like the prostitution hookers thing. Like there's, and like, I think there was a certain stretch of movies in the '80s where you always had to have like hookers, you know what I mean? Like, so, and there was
New
like,
York was full. This is pre Giuliani New York. So New York was full of hookers. That's why.
That's right.
It was,
it's
part
amazing.
Of the city, right? The it was a, crocodile a running joke in the city.
I was like, geez, a lot of hookers in these movies. And the Crocodile Dundee thing is really interesting because that's later. It was 86. It was the magical year of 86, which was the same year as Ferris Bueller's, Aliens, Top Gun, and some other great movies. About Last Night, the greatest, one of the great quadrant movies of all time. And Crocodile Dundee. And the interesting thing about that movie is how really not great Linda Kozlowski is as an actress. And that was like, it was in the beginning, it's and introducing Linda Kozlowski. And I don't know what else she did between that one and Crocodile Dundee Part 2. And
always a crapshoot.
Yes.
The introducing credit, always a crapshoot.
Yes, that's right. You should do a whole thing on this, Sonny. The introducing. How did they do on the and introducings? Because, you know, they think this could be the big thing. It's funny for one, I believe she broke up Paul Hogan's marriage, right? I think that was a story at the time. And two, her character. So she plays a journalist for Newsday. Remember New York Newsday?
Oh, yeah.
And they spent like gazillion dollars to send her to Australia and they paid him money. And then they flew him back and they put him up at the Plaza, you know, just for like material. And it was, that does not exist anymore.
The golden age.
No. And I don't even know if Newsday, I don't think Newsday is around anymore. So, I mean, they used to have, they were known for the big ticker, but it was just a different world. It's still, so, I mean, it's weird because it's like almost half the movie's actually in Australia. And then they do the New York thing and it's fish out of water. And then whatever. It's a classic, but not quite the same classic as, say, I don't know, Jaws or something. Speaking of which, you brought it to our attention, Sonny, or JVL?
JVL.
JVL. Tell us, what's going on with Jaws?
So Ben Dreyfuss is one of the very few people who I read who I think to myself, I would be friends with this guy in real life. If we like knew each other, we'd be buddies. He is a commie writer, formerly of Mother Jones and I think MSNBC. He's the son of Richard Dreyfuss. And he has a Substack now, which is outstanding. And he sent out this long essay that is basically his version of The Empire is Good. And he makes the case that in Jaws, the body count is wrong. So he says, you know, as you work through the body count of all the people, there's the girl killed in the you know, at first, then there's the kid and the boy. Anyway, and then there's this guy, Ben Gardner. And Ben Gardner is a local fisherman who is the one who says he'll go out and get the shark for only $3,000 because Quint wants $10,000 to kill the shark. And when the Chief Brody and Richard Dreyfuss's character go out later at night, they find Ben Gardner's boat abandoned. And then Richard Dreyfuss puts on his scuba gear and goes under, and they find the boat has been partially sunk and his head, the severed head, is floating. It's the only really jump scare in the whole movie.
It is, even though it's funny because it looked so fake, but nevertheless.
Yeah, it's the only really gory part of the movie.
So, what Ben says is that he's been thinking on this forever and that he does not believe that the shark killed Ben Gardner. First of all, he says, how is it that the head is left? Right? That doesn't make any sense. Why would the shark comes?
Why wouldn't
like,
the shark eat
the whole, right? Why is he eats all the body except for the head? The head gets lopped clean off. That doesn't work. But the other thing is that Richard Dreyfuss's character, while he's down there, finds a shark tooth, a great white shark tooth, sunken into the boat. And he brings this up as proof of, oh, look, this is what happened. However, the shark tooth is in the wrong way. The shark tooth has not been brought into
the dull part.
The dull part is what's sticking up. It doesn't make any sense. And so Ben Dreyfuss says, I believe that Quint killed Ben Gardner and then framed the shark for the murder. But the best part is Ben goes and tells this to his father, and his father says, yeah, actually that could happen.
That makes sense.
And in fact, during the shooting, they brought the tooth to Spielberg's attention and said, I don't know. And Spielberg just said, yeah, don't just go with it. And so he thinks maybe this is the deepest Easter egg in Jaws.
Leaving clues.
Is that Quint murdered Ben Gardner.
Right. Now, this is not to say that the shark is innocent. The shark kills many other people.
Yeah.
He's innocent of simply the Ben Gardner murder.
Yeah. And that Quint
basically used this whole thing as an excuse to get rid of a guy who knew about his dark secrets.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Because Quint speaks Japanese.
How do we know this? In a scene that they shot, but did not include in the final cut.
So not
in his sleep.
He speaks Japanese. Why would he speak Japanese? He was never on mainland Japan unless... It's just fascinating. Everything about this is awesome. Victorino, did it not tickle you as much as it tickled me?
I found it absolutely entertaining. And as far as conspiracy theories go, much better than the ridiculous internet conspiracies about Cloak and Dagger being the precursor to the Fight Club, for example, you know, and people could have a field day with this. But
what?
You know, the Henry Thomas is Ed Norton, you know, and so it's this whole weird thing about the imaginary friends, the great Dabney Coleman, and then, of course, Brad Pitt. And it goes on at length, right? But this one, when he starts off, before he gets to the tooth, he has a number of different theories about why he thinks that it was Quint. Some of them are, okay, it's circumstantial or it's interesting. We don't know. Maybe Ben Card knew something about him from the war, et cetera, et cetera. Also, I did not buy the whole thing about, you know, the shark having a personal thing about, I'm going directly for Quint. He eats anybody. You know, he tried to eat Richard Dreyfuss, you know, obviously. And I thought that, although he's right about it was the craziest thing about Jaws the Revenge, Jaws 4.
This
time it's personal because it follows you into the Bahamas. And that was with Mary Van Peebles, I believe, and the great Michael Caine. Because the thing I remember about it is Michael Caine won the Academy Award for Hannah and Her Sisters, but was unable to accept the award because he was filming Jaws 4 in the Bahamas, you know? But again, like he said, these bred actors, they do anything, you know, they'll just do any job. And then he gets to the part about the tooth. And I thought, for me, that was it, mind blowing. And then when he brings to his father and Richard Dreyfuss pauses, thinks about it, it was like a pregnant pause. And was like, yes, you know, go on. He says, go on. Or I can't say that he did not, you know? And so I loved it. I had a couple of questions. One is, the next thing is, he should ask Steven Spielberg, because that's a great theory. And number two, is it in Peter Benchley's book? You know, how much detail is there about Quint and about Ben Gardner and that whole thing? Because that would be interesting. Think about the scene where, he's capable of doing it, Quint. He wanted that money. Remember, he destroys the radio. He was willing to kill everybody just to get the shark. And the other thing is, there's a great scene where he throws down the machete onto the boat, and it's a great shot with the shimmering water. But he clearly knows how to wield that machete. You'd not want to be on the opposite end of that.
You could use a machete to hack a dude's head off.
No, that's totally right. So the chum.
What about the chum argument?
Yeah. Right? You know what?
The chum is actually Ben Gardner.
Blood, it could be. It could be. You can't say it's not. And what did you think, Sonny?
It's very funny. Now I'm just imagining Steven Spielberg getting asked this question on every stop of the West Side Story.
All right.
Press tour.
The pressers.
According to Ben Dreyfuss.
Ben Dreyfuss from Substack.
Dreyfuss. He has a theory about Jaws. And like, I want this to happen just so after like the sixth or seventh time Spielberg is like, yes, yes, the shark was framed.
You're damn right. All along. Say, Sonny, can you throw a link to that in the show notes?
Sure. I think it's awesome. Locked. I think you have to subscribe.
Oh,
to
it
his,
is. Okay.
Well, to people
should
stack,
subscribe.
But,
I subscribe.
You should.
To
you
it.
Should subscribe. It's good. I subscribe. I quite enjoy it.
Are you buddies with Ben?
Yeah, we're friendly. We're fine. We trade DMs. I actually met him once up in New York for drinks when one of the times I was up there. So
do you think he and I would like each other?
I think you guys would probably get along okay.
I'd
don't
have
know.
To get
I mean,
rid of one of my existing friends to add him.
You'd have to, you know,
zero sum game for you.
You don't want to have too many friends. So, no. But you, he's definitely, I like Ben a lot. He's definitely like, he can be a little bit awkward. He can be a little, you know, like all the rest of us. So I think it'd be great. I think you guys would be fine.
Well, if Flag doesn't make it, then maybe I'll go and become friends with Ben.
Well, this is true. You could have a spot opening up. You could, right. You know.
All right. I did not see.
If Flag poops himself to death.
There's nothing left to give. There's nothing left to give.
He turns himself inside out.
That's right. I did not see Jaws. That was too young for Jaws because that came out in 70. Even for me, shockingly, you know, I did see because I saw Star Wars in 77. But Jaws was a year before then. I saw King Kong in the theater, and that was the King Kong.
Wait, how old were you when Jaws came out? You were like four?
Three. I was three. I was three, so I didn't get
it. I mean, that's pretty young.
That. No.
Although, Jaws is rated PG.
Yeah, no, we would have. If we had a chance to see it, we would have. We just didn't, you know. We were in transition.
I saw Jaws for the first time, like, relatively recently, like, within the last 10 years, maybe 10 years ago. And I just remember.
What do you mean you saw it? What do you mean you saw it for the first time?
I saw it for the first time. I had never seen it until like 10 years ago.
What?
Jaws? No, I just had never seen it. It was just an empty spot on my resume. I just had never gotten around to seeing it. So I finally watched it.
So you were like 28? Were you already
like
a movie reviewer?
Well, probably like mid-20s. So okay. Maybe it was like 15 right, years. Right, I don't know. Right. But it was when I was living in that basement apartment in DC. Between the age of like, well, I guess it has been a while now. Anyway, 15 years. Let's say 15
okay.
years.
Okay.
But I remember the thing I remember thinking as I started watching this and as the like nude girl is swimming and getting murdered in the pool that you can see it all. And I was just like, wait, what is this rated? I thought this was PG.
PG.
And I looked at the Netflix envelope or whatever. And I was like, holy shit, this is a PG movie. So,
PG was great.
Shocking to me.
PG was great back in the day. Now PG is not, PG is G now. But PG then was R. I think about 16. Thank you. Yes, JVL. I said that. I think about 16 candles. There's gratuitous nudity in that movie. And like, you know, but it's not anymore. Not anymore.
Was that PG-13? Must have been.
No, it was before PG-13. I'm pretty sure 16 counts. You can look it up. I don't know. I'm assuming it was PG. I saw Jaws 3 in 3D in the movie theater. And that was something. I think we had a discussion about this in the previous episode, so I'll skip that. But that was, as we all... Yes, JV, are you going to say
Victorino,
something?
Victorino?
Yes.
If Black Widow had been made in the era you're talking about, if this was a 1978 movie, and it was rated PG, how do you think it would have done on the quadrants?
It would have done much better than it actually scored on the quadrants. Speaking of which, this week we're talking about Black Widow starring Scarlett Johansson. Over the weekend, Black Widow netted $80 million, followed by F9 with 11.4, and in third place, Boss Baby Family Business with
$8 million.
Box office thoughts.
What's interesting about there are two interesting things about Black Widow. The first is that it was heavily front loaded. At one point, Friday night, Saturday morning, the projections had it playing out to about 90 million over the weekend, and instead it came in at 80 million. Which suggests that it was very heavily front loaded. Lots of people went Thursday and Friday, and then it did not hold as the numbers suggested a movie of this type would. Now, whether or not it was just front loaded, as like lots of things are kind of front loaded right now. There's a lot of people who are going to see things opening weekend, and numbers are dropping very, very quickly and steeply after that. We've seen it both with F9, which you would kind of expect because it's a bad movie, and A Quiet Place 2, which had a big first weekend, a second weekend drop, and is like held okay after that. Has held very well actually after that. But the working theory is the people who want to go to see movies are all going in the first weekend, and the likes aren't really there. But the second thing that is interesting about this, about Black Widow's box office this week, is that Disney released the Premier Access numbers. It is also available on Premier Access, and for the first time they let us know what those so it's $30. I thought you were going to see it in the Premier Access.
I did.
You did. Okay. So it's $30. It's $30 to watch it at home. And basically what you're doing is you're unlocking it early if you have Disney Plus. Like, as long as you'll have access to it before everybody else on Disney Plus. And it grossed $60 million on Disney Plus in the world. So, in other words, 2 million people around the world paid $30 to watch this at home. 2 million households paid $30 to watch this at home. Which is interesting. There are all sorts of reasons you could speculate as to why they actually released these numbers. One, I think, fair speculation is that the inner weekend drop, the Friday to Saturday to Sunday drop, was so high and unexpected that they panicked a little bit and they said, well, we got to make this look better. So we're going to toss in this $60 million of Premier Access money to make it. We can say, oh, no, it was actually $140 million weekend. Not an unfair speculation.
Right. Yeah.
But I mean, the reason that they're showing us this is because they think it's a very good number and they think that it can be used to bolster the idea that this is a winning business strategy. Yeah. And if we see them do the same thing with Shang-Chi and the Eternals, which they have said they are not going to, they've said that this is going to be theatrical. We're committed to theatrical. If they change their mind and do Premier Access for those movies, I think you can basically start the countdown clock on theaters as a mass entertainment option
again,
because if Disney gets out of the theatrical game, Disney, which has 50 to 60-70% of the box office in some years, if Disney is kind of wavering on this, the theatrical industry cannot survive, really, just is what it comes down to.
Well, Disney won't get out of the theatrical business until they have sucked the theatrical business dry. And so the first thing they'll do is up their already inflated percentage of the box office take. Right. And so releasing these numbers is a way of giving them more leverage when they go to renegotiate with the exhibitors. And, you know, it used to be a 50-50 split. Then it was dependent upon the movie. Right. And now certain studios play much harder ball on this. And I expect that Disney is going to basically be demanding, like, 75 cents of every dollar in the near future. Because if you are Regal or AMC, or like, what are you going to do? Are you going to tell Disney, no, then we shall not show your movies in our cinemas? Mm-hmm. Right. I mean,
they're holding the car.
I mean, the theaters are all screwed anyway, because they've let the window get so small now that, I mean, A Quiet Place 2 is out now on digital. It's on Paramount Plus. It's you can get it on Blu-ray in a week or two here. And that's still in theaters. That's still the number 4 movie in the country or something like that. It's Not great.
Not good.
Nick, not great for theaters.
You want to give us a big boy review of Black Widow?
Black Widow. The MCU is back. It's the latest installment of the adventures of the Avengers and Friends. This one is stars Black Widow. This one stars Scarlett Johansson as Black Widow. She's not dead anymore because we go back in time, and this is a prequel, really. It takes place in between Captain America: Civil War and Avengers: Infinity War, it is basically about her time off the grid. She reconnects with her family. The opening moments is a bit like if you guys ever watched the FX show The Americans. She's living in Ohio with a Russian family, and they're spying on. They're trying to get some information out of a Ohio plant.
That's right. Even the credits. Are American-esque,
and the credits are exactly like The Americans, with like the historical figures with the black. I mean, it's like if I were the guys who show ran The Americans, I would be like a little bit annoyed, yeah, frankly. I'd be Weisberg, like, you know, that's, yeah, you know, that's the, you're ripping us off. But anyway, she has to get back together with them because somebody has restarted the Black Widow program. She thought she had shut it down. She killed the guy, but the guy's not dead. And now she's got to get back together with her sister, who's played by Florence Pugh, who was the evil girlfriend in Midsommar, as well as some other stuff. They get together with the mom and dad. David Harbour plays the dad, Red Guardian, who's basically the Russian version of Captain America, the only communist super soldier. I guess Red Skull was a Nazi, so that doesn't count. They got to free the widows. Look, here's the thing about this movie is that I didn't care about anything that was happening in it. I didn't care about a single thing that was happening in it, but I did really enjoy all of the familial interactions, the kind of, mom and dad playing house with the two sisters. Florence Pugh is very funny, kind of making fun of, there's this one very good scene where she's like, you know, why do you always do this? And she kind of like flips her head up and poses. And Scarlett Johansson's like, what are you talking about? You know, why do you do this? You're such a poser. Why are you such a poser? Right. And it's just like, it's very funny big sister, little sister stuff that I think works very well. Everything else in this movie does not work at all for me. I mean, down to the two villains. So the, speaking seriously again about the plot for a moment, there's a character called the Taskmaster who is out trying to catch them. I know nothing about this character from the comics, so I have no idea what their deal is. But in this movie, the character is designed to mimic all of the moves that other Avengers have done. That the Avengers, this character, Taskmaster, studies the film, right? And then they do the moves like Captain America with the shield or Hawkeye with the arrow. But the problem with this is that it just makes the whole thing feel like a weak derivative version of everything we've seen before. It's not exciting or interesting or new. It's just kind of blah. And it feels like a replay. It feels like things we've seen before. And the other villain in this is Ray Winstone, who plays the head of the Widow program, who has been, kidnapping these girls. And, he gives this really sexist speech about, like, I'm using the world's only resource that we have too much of, little girls. I was like, wow, that's really evil. You're an evil guy. You're sexist to boot. That's two strikes against you, my friend. The problem with this character, whose name I don't remember and I'm not going to look up, Ray Winstone plays him like a British gangster. His British accent.
He's not doing a Russian accent at all.
He cannot hide his British accent, but he gives it like kind of a Russian patina. It's like watching a Guy Ritchie character in a MCU movie, but one who can't curse at all and is just kind of like fat and slovenly and like he's playing a British gangster, except as a Russian bureaucrat.
Yeah.
The movie is fine. I wouldn't say I was bored exactly while I was watching it, but it is not in the top half of the Marvel movies. I would put it in the bottom half, probably right in the middle of the pack. It's competent as all these things are. It has really good, the actors are all, you know, Ray Winstone aside, the actors are all very good. I like Scarlett Johansson a lot. I like Florence Pugh a lot. I like David Harbour a lot. I like Rachel Weisz a lot, who plays the mom in this. But man, I did not care. I did not care. And that's a problem. You should care about people in the movies. And I just didn't care. I didn't care.
Thank you for that. That's a very good point. You should care about people in the movies.
You should care about people in the movies you're watching.
You should feel bad or feel good or feel bad. You should
feel something for him.
Right.
I don't know.
Right. Like, the payoffs and whatnot. You know, JVL.
Didn't do anything for me.
JVL, what did you think about this Marvel movie?
You know, I halfway liked it while I was watching it. Halfway. There are things to like about it. But in the 24 hours since I watched it, I've really kind of soured on it.
It didn't wear well.
And because there are just a bunch of problems with it. So, I mean, the biggest one, okay, I should start with this. My priors are that I have always wanted a Black Widow movie and that this is not the Black Widow movie I wanted. Mm-hmm. I had two options for a Black Widow movie. I either wanted Black Widow's Mission Impossible,
mm-hmm.
which is a sort of balls out adult action movie in the vein of like Mission Impossible Fallout or something. Mm-hmm. Or I wanted Marvel's Lethal Weapon, where Black Widow and Clint Barton do buddy cop stuff as they go on a romp through like
Budapest
mm-hmm. or something like mm-hmm. that. Right. You know, mm-hmm. where they're cracking wise and having fun stuff together.
I wanted Black Widow Showgirls. That's what I was hoping for.
Black Widow XXX.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I didn't get another of those. But what they do give you has a bunch of pretty good ideas, but that are only half formed. And the best idea it has is the little sister Yelena, who is the heart of this movie.
She is.
Except that the film doesn't go all the way of giving the movie to her and centering the movie around her, which is what it should have done.
Oh, yeah.
Because so Natasha Romanoff is going to live because we know when she dies and it's after this thing. And so all of the stakes are not about Natasha. The stakes are actually about, is Yelena going to live or die? And then slightly less is Rachel Weisz's Melina. Are they going to live or die? It's all about the family. They don't really put the other three family members into enough jeopardy to make you worry about them, which is what you have to do. That's where all the dramatic tension comes, is from worrying about the family members.
And the one moment where they do kind of put Yelena in danger is the worst bit of special effects in the entire movie.
Oh, the end?
Where she's like, this was fun. And then she shoves the stick into the...
That was the worst thing I've ever seen.
And like, blows backwards. I was like, when this happened in the movie theater, I was like, that's the worst effect I've ever seen.
That was
in a movie of this
There was
sort.
Something about the color of the light on her. When she goes, it was really terrible.
Wrong. They had 2 years to fix that.
Well, but Yelena is also the other thing is, I mean, she's the locus of conflict in that because you care about whether she lives or dies, but also because she is the center of the family conflict as well, because she is the one who was abandoned by everybody, including Natasha.
Innocent. She was the true innocent.
The true innocent. And she's the one who wants it all to be a family and wants it to come together. And so what I really wish the film had done was had the courage to make a Black Widow movie that's not really about Black Widow, where Black Widow is more of the, you know, a supporting character.
It would have been very interesting.
I just think that's the way to, if you're going to do this movie, which mm-hmm. is a movie about her family and what it was like growing up as Black Widow or whatnot, then it really needs to be about Yelena, who's, as I said, an interesting character. And is really interesting because she is still a Russian, right? You know, by this point in time, and you know, 2015 or whenever this movie is set chronologically, Natasha has been in the West so long that all the way down deep, she's still Russian. But you know, with everything else, she's basically a Westerner. And Yelena is still very, you know, she has this great line, which is she's like, "This would be a cool way to die," you know, which is just a very Russian. No, but you know, she's just fatalistic and thinks that everything's going to end badly. And
she has a great line later when she's strapped to the gurney. She goes, "This is not a cool way to die."
And I just
best
wanted more
character
of that.
In the movie by far. Best yeah, written.
Absolutely. I mean, the movie should have been the, about her. She should be the lead.
The reason she is essentially the lead for all the reasons you lay out here, and she is the best written character because she is the new Black Widow. I mean, she's going to be in the next Disney Plus series with well, whatever Renner. She's going to be in the series with Jeremy Renner. The teaser at the end is her with Julia Louis-Dreyfus, mm-hmm. Who is reprising her role from
on a chalkboard.
Well, yeah, it didn't match, but who is she supposed to be with?
Who's nails on a chalkboard?
Julia Louis-Dreyfus in a superhero movie. Get her the fuck out of here. I love Julia Louis-Dreyfus. I think she is maybe the most gifted comedian of her of her generation. But having Maggie Leiser showing up as like a, you know, Nick Fury style super duper heavy bureaucrat.
So those of us who aren't familiar with this stuff, who is she?
I don't even know.
she's something. Somebody said she's Madame Hydra, but I don't think that's exactly right. I don't know. She shows up in Falcon and the Winter Soldier as JVL says, like kind of a behind the scenes Nick Fury type. Sending people on missions.
Tying it in there. That is the time.
I am telling you that this. There are moments that you see in mostly in film, not really in TV, where you have. Again, it's not even good or bad actors, but just actors who are so horribly miscast that they just have the tone of the entire enterprise around them wrong. This is one of those moments.
Also, Ray Winstone.
I love Ray Winstone.
Yeah, that's a character. Yeah, I think that's right. But I don't mean so. Ray Winstone could have worked as a different character, right? Julia Louis-Dreyfus should be kept a million miles away from this superhero stuff, movies.
Right.
It's just terrible. I mean, can we just spend 2 minutes about the politics of the movie?
Sure.
Which is interesting because for some reason in my mind, I thought this movie was going to take place during the Cold War. I forget how old Scarlett Johansson is.
That really hurts it though, doesn't it?
Yeah, that it's not.
Having all of that, the Russian, you know, the American stuff happening post-Cold War, it takes a lot of the tension out of it. Doesn't make any sense.
I'll
give the political stuff in a minute. Victorino, were you as down on this as I was?
Yeah, I liked it halfway through, and I mean the first half, I should say. I thought it had a strong start. I think it gets about a quadrant score of about a B minus, C plus. The plot is a C. I don't like disguises like Mission Impossible. So I think it's a cop out. In the very end, spoiler alert,
Kate, what just happened here?
I don't understand. Okay.
I actually have a question about that because I couldn't remember. JVL, do you remember them using masks like that at any other point in
Marvel?
Yes.
In the Marvel movies?
Yes.
What? When did that happen?
Black Widow, in fact, uses that mask when she infiltrates at the end of Civil War, I believe. The tower with Robert Redford. Isn't Robert Redford the end of Civil War?
Yeah, it's Winter Soldier.
Winter Soldier. End of Winter Soldier when they are bringing down Robert Redford.
Really?
Okay. I couldn't remember it. All right.
She's disguised as one of the councilwomen.
Oh. And it's like a digital disguise? It's a digital disguise?
Yeah. This is why I said it. Black Widow Mission
Impossible.
What year
is this? Okay. Duration is a C. That was a long movie. It felt long.
Too long.
Violence and action was an A-ish. The fight scenes in the beginning I thought were great between Scarlett Johansson and Florence Pugh. I thought that was great, albeit a little derivative. And I can't do the sex nudity thing because it was PG-13. But it was like the Americans meets Mission Impossible meets the Incredibles meets Bourne Identity. There's brainwashing going on.
You know, so Victorino, can I just break in here?
Please, this
film owes a very great deal to the Bourne Identity in terms of its action aesthetic.
Oh, yeah.
Except it is a sanitized version of that. And that is weird. Right. If you're going to go hard action,
it's like, hard.
Edged weapon combat and people hitting each other over the head
with blunt force,
and then not have there be any physical. I think that's the worst of both worlds because it leaves everything feeling weightless.
Yes.
Do you see what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
Yeah.
The opening fight in the kitchen living room, that I thought worked fine. It's everything else that felt weightless. Right.
And then for me, finally, when I just finally checked out, it was the end when the space station is crashing down and they're fighting and bouncing around and flying and everything else. And it was CGI overload. And you know how I've been talking about this for many episodes now. I am so CGI'd to death. And that was CGI overload. And when she shoves that thing, Sonny, as you mentioned, the rod, that rod into the intake.
When they insert the rod into the hole.
How did this not qualify
for that quadrant?
And then the effects were just terrible. The explosion explodes right in her face, and she just like, woo, you know.
Oh, the worst. It's just the worst effect I've ever seen. I was just like that.
The idea of
idiotic.
The idea of a female army, the better female army, in my opinion, was an octopussy.
I didn't know you were going to say that.
No, you didn't think I was going to say that.
I 100% knew you were going to say that.
That was a female army. Then.
Maude Adams and her circus girls.
Maude Adams. Don't mess with them, man. Don't mess with them. Vijay Armatrosh paid the price. Okay, go ahead.
On the topic of the politics, if we can get back to serious discussion. On the topic of the politics of this movie and the time frame in which it is set, what are all of these widows all over the world supposed to be doing? Even who are they? Like, this guy is like, I'll tank stock markets and I'll blow up oil wells. Really? I'm like, who for?
Why you can stay in your little state there above the earth. That's a lot of fuel. Yeah, that is a lot of fuel.
Yeah. I like
the solar panels. I have no idea.
It doesn't make the idea of infiltrating all of these people into like positions of power or whatever is fine, but to what end? For who? I like, none of this really made any sense. I couldn't tell if he was just freelancing at this point or if he was, you know,
right,
doing it for Mother Russia. What was
I can tell you, I have the answer for this, which is that isn't important. What's important is the metaphor, right? I mean, this is a movie about abusive relationships.
Yes. I understand all that.
But it is not a thought through, and this is my complaint. So one, I know you guys didn't, but I really liked Birds of Prey. I thought Birds of Prey was great.
I didn't see it.
It's a very feminist movie. It's about toxic masculinity, but it has like interesting
the Harley Quinn movie.
Yeah, it has interesting things to say about it in a sort of weird, off kilter way.
Terrible movie.
This is the most paint by numbers. You know, it's like, so it's about abusive relationships in which the men literally control the women with an iPad, and in which the women can't fight back to protect themselves because of pheromones. And that's the point. I just thought to myself, I actually am all for like a movie about abusive relationships, but you need to do a little bit better on the central metaphor. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, this is too lazy.
Also, if I had the power to control pheromones, I would not use it for those nefarious purposes.
You don't care at all about the stock market.
No. Nefarious, but not in that way.
Ticket to Hogwarts, please.
So terrible. No, I thought it was a good cast. You know, Ray Winstone, you know where I like Ray Winstone in, and not in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, if you were thinking I was going to say that, but rather in
The Departed.
Yes, The Departed. He's great.
That's his best movie.
And he has a sort of Boston Irish-ish accent there. That worked for me. This was weird. Did you all recognize Olya Kurylenko from another previous episode?
Well, there's a very funny thing that she is the silent, she's the only person who can speak with an actual Russian accent in the whole movie. It's silent.
Oh yeah, it's one of the greatest insults.
One line of dialogue.
Again, since Scarface, when it's like only the second actors or the secondhand actors are the ones who are Hispanic. Everybody else is like Italian. It doesn't speak well of Black Widow that she was on a mission to kill. Oh, his name is Dreykov, to kill Dreykov. And collateral damage daughter, and she kills neither, it turns out, because explosions don't do that.
She's not very good at her job.
He actually, to be honest, dusted himself off, apparently. Not bad.
You know, I gotta say, I am a huge ScarJo fan. I just, I love her. I think that she and Anne Hathaway are the two most gifted actors of their generation. I love her in everything she does. She has a very low center of gravity as an actor. You know, what she does isn't very showy, but it's always built on these real foundations for the character. I don't think this was her best work.
No, No.
Is it okay to say that?
Yes.
We all know she wasn't bad.
We all know wasn't bad. We all know what her. We all know what her best work is in Good Company.
No, I mean
you haven't. Well, you haven't seen Under the Skin.
Okay, add it to my list.
Dailymotion.com.
Thank you.
That's where you can rent the whole movie on dailymotion.com. Sorry, that's what I meant, Victoria.
More thoughts. More thoughts on Black Widow.
No.
I created a ranking.
Oh, yeah. Hey, you know, I have one thought before we go to your ranking. Yes. That's what everybody wants. Please. So everybody has gone crazy about the Malia J cover of Smells Like Teen Spirit that overlays
the beginning sequence,
which is great and very haunting. Except that it's not really a cover of Smells Like Teen Spirit. It's a cover of the Tori Amos cover of Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Tori Amos did a cover?
Nobody remembers.
No, I don't remember.
She released an EP in 1992, which had two covers. And it was Smells Like Teen Spirit and Angie.
Oh, yeah. Like Rolling Stones.
Yeah, the Rolling Stones Angie. And it's like a weird, haunting, you know, it's very dated. It's from the girl with a piano era of alt music, alt rock. But like this thing is, if you were to listen to the Tori Amos cover of it, you'd be like, oh, she's just trying to sound like Tori Amos did.
That'd also, this version weird. Of Smells Like Teen Spirit sucked anyway. It was annoying and bad. And
yeah, I wouldn't go that far.
Was a distraction from, it's of that whole genre of like, we're going to do like a sad, slow version of the song for the trailer, but except it was in the actual movie. Mm-hmm. I would have hated it less if it was in the trailer. Just put it in the trailer.
And then never to be heard again. Movie. And then just, but all only in the trailer. And then people go into, hey, where'd that song go? It is gone.
No.
Okay. I saw Tori Amos in concert in Vienna.
Really?
Yeah, because I was trying to impress a girl.
I was going to say, were you trying to get in somebody's pants? I really love Tori Amos's music. It really speaks to me about our culture.
Song, Icicle. Okay, my ranking.
Here, have a drink.
When you come back, your drink will be ready for you. That's when you come back. Thank you. My ranking is ready for this: Russian accents in movies from most subtle to least subtle. I know already what JVL knows is the number one is. Okay, so let me start with number five. Most subtle to least subtle Russian accents in movies. Number five, Sam Neill in Hunt for Red October. He's so good in this. And even though he's Australian, when he says, I would have liked to see Montana and the rabbits, I just love it. It's just the right amount. You're going to be surprised by number four, Brigitte Nielsen in Rocky IV. Why would I say that? She actually did a pretty good job. You're like, why not? Why not Ivan Drago? Why not Dolph Lundgren? Right? Well, if he spoke, I would have something to measure it against, but obviously he doesn't really talk. And also Brigitte Nielsen, much better as a Russian than she was as speaking in English in Cobra. Okay. Number three, Robin Williams in Moscow on the Hudson. He works very hard at his roles. But Robin Williams is always in many ways over the top, even when he tries not to be. And it's like sort of Russian, but over the top. It's a little bit of both. Slightly bit much. Number two, Kate Blanchett in Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls. Okay, she's got the hair, the sword, mind reading. I want to know what's going on. What is going on? That's what I want to know. Okay, and then number one is John Malkovich in Rounders. Go ahead, JVL.
Sonny, check your texts.
I saw that you texted.
Because while Victorino was talking, I texted both of you that he was going to say number one is John Malkovich.
And what's his great line?
Teddy KGB. What is he? I'm fucking you with your own money.
Pay the man his money.
It was as out of control as the outfit, the tracksuit. Honorable mention, by the way, Viggo Mortensen in Eastern Promises, which I thought he was great. And Eastern Promises did really well on the quadrants. I know what some of you are saying. There was some male nudity in there. Yes, it's true. But it is Viggo Mortensen. Okay. Corrections. And yes.
Learning something about Vic today.
Hey, just hashtag, just saying.
Like every time you go, everybody swings, you know, both ways. So to sometimes. Speak. It's,
corrections.
No big deal.
Corrections and shout outs. we forgot to mention our being mentioned in a car crash video. Sonny, what was this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was there was a, you know, people put together these compilations of, you know, terrible drivers getting in accidents and stuff, and or seeing other people get in accidents. And one of the people is listening to Subbeacon, Vic Mattis. Okay. makes an appearance.
And JVL. And the worst, and JVL. The weirdest thing is,
and JVL, not me, of
the
course.
But they were filming the bad driver. Our they listener were was not,
they
bad
were not the bad driver.
Our listener was filming.
I could not even figure out what episode it was. We've done so many. Too okay. Short. That's all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, compliments, tweet us at SunnyBunch, at Victorina Mattis. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on Patreon. Just go to subbeacon.com. We're there. Tell your friends. Until next time. Anything?
Nothing. Sunny, do you want to tell people what we're doing?
We're gonna have a special bonus members only episode. We're gonna actually tape it here in a minute. But it's gonna be, we're gonna be ranking all of the MCU movies, and we're not coming with our own rankings. We're not, you know, gonna read down 22-0 or whatever the total is now at this point. We're gonna vote internally. We're gonna come up with the official canon Subbeacon rankings of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, right live in front of God and everyone else. So you'll see what we think. So that'll be fun. But again, it's going to be, you know, we've been putting the shows back on iTunes, and people have been listening there. But we want to make sure we give people, you know, who are paying for the show, something a little bit extra. In addition to getting it ahead of everybody who's getting it for free, you know, we give you some bonus content. So that's what we're going to, I have no idea how long this is going to take. I mentioned this to the guys before we started the show. They're going to be getting to sleep at like midnight tonight. So Vic is just shaking his head. He's like, help things me. I do.
What do I have to do?
Better than being at a party.
Better than being at a party. So anyway, we're going to bang that out here in a second. So I think that's going to be it. For this, are we gonna assure it's fine? Or is it fine?
Yeah, I'm sure it's fine.